I'd love for there to be a cure so I wouldn't have this job anymore. But I really also feel like it's important that people don't feel stigmatized by this disease. It is different than a lot of other ones, and we know people are living longer because other diseases are being cured. But I really want people to know that just because you're diagnosed does not mean that your life is over. A lot of times people walk away from a doctor's office feeling like very depressed. What's going to happen now? And is it just this is it? And I really want people to feel that there's hope and there are things that you can do productively and that we do focus on their abilities because we try to help people do as much as they can. So I think that's where I want people to be able to reach out and not feel like there's nothing else to do. That's not what we want people to walk away with.
That's Victoria Cohen, Executive Director of the Long Island Alzheimer's and Dementia Center, and this is Healthcare Confidential. I'm your host, Teresa Jacob Ellis, talking with innovators and experts about health and healthcare in America. In 2019, November 3rd fell on a Sunday. I remember that day because it happened to be my husband's birthday, a celebration of the day that he had taken his first breath. It was also the day that my mother took her last. She had suffered for years with Alzheimer's disease, a horrible condition that robbed her slowly, first of her memories, then her connections with our family, her dignity, her independence, and eventually her life. But unfortunately, my story and my family's story are not unique. There are an estimated 6 million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease. Tori Cohen joined the Long Island Alzheimer's and Dementia Center in 2003 as a social worker, and she's been at the helm of that organization since 2015. Under her leadership, the center has grown and evolved to become a valued resource for families across the Long Island region. Tori, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, and thanks for having me on today.
Tell us a little bit about your background. What led you to this work and what led you to become such a passionate advocate for families affected by Alzheimer's disease and dementia?
Well, I've always loved working with people and specifically the geriatric population. And what led me to working at the center was I had a grandmother who had dementia and I spent a lot of time with her. And it led me to believe that families need a lot of resources. They need to have someone holding their hand through this journey, step by step. And a center like ours can provide all of that. So within, I think when I started in 2003, right before that, I had worked at NYU Medical Center and met several families that had the disease and no one knew about it before they entered the hospital. So a center, again, that someone could go to get resources, counseling, and advice was very necessary. And that's what led me to the Alzheimer's organization.
So you have described the organization as a grassroots organization. What does that mean and how does that affect the work that you do there?
When I say grassroots, it was founded by five women in Port Washington and they all had a connection with the disease. And our center is not connected to a national organization. A lot of people get confused. There's the Alzheimer's Association. There's the Alzheimer's Disease Resource Center. Ours is just local. All money that raised on Long Island stays in Long Island and stays with our programs and services. So that's what sets us apart from other organizations that people are more familiar with. And we really pride ourselves in our hands-on programs and services that we do at our center.
How many people do you have working with you? How large is your staff?
We have around 28 people working with us, which includes clinical social workers, program assistants, recreation coordinators, and bus drivers. We have two buses that pick up and drop off people 6 days a week.
And are the founders still involved, part of the picture? Or
one of the founders is very involved. She happens to live in Florida, but she has come up and visited the center. We moved to Westbury in 2017. after being in Port Washington for over 30 years. So that was exciting. And she wanted to look at the new space and see what we were doing. And since things have really evolved since she had left the organization on a daily basis, it was really nice to have her there seeing what has happened with the organization that she founded.
She must be so proud to see how far you've come under your leadership. And I know you also, in addition to the move, which you undertook for specific reasons, you also changed the name of the organization. So can you tell us about that?
Well, so the founder that I was speaking of, when she founded the organization, she was looking to have programs and services replicated in other areas. So the reason why it was called the Long Island Alzheimer's Foundation is that we were looking to give money to other places so they would be able to run these much needed programs and respite. And what happened was over the years when our program started evolving and changing, and it felt like under our roof that we were trying to do the best job that we could and it wasn't happening in other places, we kept getting phone calls for people that wanted us to give money, not because they wanted to provide these programs. And I kept saying over and over, especially as a social worker answering the phones at that moment, being in the trenches, we need money too. We need to be able to help people. We don't give out money. So when we made the move to Westbury and we wanted to be more accessible and have more people come to our center, I decided, A, we need to change foundation out of the name and change it to center, which means that people are doing programs and services underneath our roof and not just admin work. And also, look, we all know that Alzheimer's is a very stigmatizing disease and we needed to add dimension to it. A lot of people call up and they just say, oh, you're just doing Alzheimer's? Oh, okay, well, this is not going to work. Well, you know, we'll try another organization after they, you know, finally did reach out. No, Alzheimer's is just another form of dementia. So it just needed to be put in the name. I think it's raised a lot more awareness. I think we're getting a lot more people coming to our center now. And hopefully, you know, as time goes by, that A, we always want to have a cure. But while we don't, that people look to us for that hope and support.
That's amazing. How many people do you provide services to on average?
In a year's time, I feel that we touch around 4,000 lives. We can touch someone's life by a counseling call. It could be someone that calls us once and never calls again, or someone that joins all of our programs. So we really are reaching out. And during COVID, which was such a challenging time for everyone, we were able to use our virtual platforms to do a further reach. So people even in another state, we had once someone call from Puerto Rico asking for some support and they joined one of our virtual support groups. It was really, you know, that part was really nice. If we were going to take anything positive out of COVID, that we were able to help more people.
Yeah, that's amazing. It did really help. I would imagine a lot of organizations realize that they could have a further geographic reach because of the availability and accessibility of virtual platforms like this. So I was curious about some of the specific programs that you offer. I know that you have programs for early stage patients, mid-stage and later stage patients. How do you support patients and families?
Well, the nice part about our center in Westbury is that we can work with someone from the early stages of the disease to the end stages. So we really try to tailor our activities to each and every individual. Not everyone likes the same activities. We really, really look to have them be productive in whatever activity they are taking place at our center. So we have rooms that are designated for early, moderate, and later. And usually though, we all join together in the mid part of the day for entertainment. But in the beginning part of the day, they might do trivia, they might do art, they might be able to just sit and socialize. I always say, even if someone's not a social person, a lot of times someone says, oh, they weren't really social, so they don't have to, you know, come, they may not like it, first of all, we don't know if anyone will like anything once they come to center. They may be doing things that they've never done before, but it's so important that people have a place where they can come. And even if they sit and they're not verbal, that they're just surrounded by others and they're not isolated in their home. The other great part about our program is that we have a lunch program. So when our participants come Monday through Saturday, lunch is provided. They choose from three different options and it gets delivered to our center and with the right protocol, especially from COVID, all packaged and ready to go. So it's just another respite for the caregiver not to have to worry about. So, and as I mentioned before, we also have transportation that can help the family so we can pick them up and drop them off at the program. So it makes a longer day, but it gives the caregivers a little bit more respite. The other important program that I didn't speak of is that there's people that can come to the center, and then there are people that are more homebound that they want people to be coming to their house. So we have an in-home respite program where we send our trained employees to the home to offer respite 2 hours every other week. And someone might say 2 hours, oh, that, you know, doesn't seem like a lot of time, but when you're living with someone who has Alzheimer's, 2 hours is like 6 hours. The fact of being able to either take a much needed break, go to a doctor's appointment is huge. So it's really a really, really much needed service, which makes us a little bit unique because there's not a lot of programs like that on Long Island. And sometimes people like to do both. So, you know, I keep going on and on, Teresa, but the other part of it is that those are two of our main programs. But the other side is that we're not just helping the individual who's diagnosed, we're helping their caregiver. And this disease affects the whole family. So with our caregivers, we offer caregiver support groups specific to spouses and adult children. We offer trainings. We usually do a lot of surveying to see what kind of information people are looking for. So we try to gear some of our trainings or webinars to what people are really looking for. And also we've had in the past, and hopefully it will happen sometime in the next couple of months, programs called the Memory Cafe, where caregivers and their loved ones can join others at a restaurant, listen to some music, really more of an informal support group, but really get the opportunity to be with their loved one in a space and also be with other people that are dealing with this disease. So people really love that program. And a lot of times we get a lot of, you know, sponsors to give us money for those particular programs.
That sounds amazing. And I wish I could turn back the clock and travel back in time and avail myself of some of those programs when I was in the thick of that. And as you said, being a caregiver is one of the most difficult things I think that people can ever do. It's also incredibly rewarding and has moments of humor, but you know, Alzheimer's patients are adults, then they need to be treated with respect and dignity. But at the same time, you know, their decision making is sometimes impaired and you have to keep them safe. And it is difficult. So it sounds like you offer an amazing range of services for the caregivers as well. Are there costs associated with the programs that you offer?
Good question. Mostly our clients pay privately. We do, though, have a hardship scale that we offer the programs to someone that isn't able to afford at a very discounted rate. So usually if someone was coming in, our day program is around $80 a day plus transportation. But this also includes lunch, our lunch program, which I say is free, and a very nutritious lunch that is okayed by Nassau County Office of the Aging, who looks over what the menu is every week. So we also take to manage long-term care contracts with Aetna and AgeWell. So even if someone didn't come to us with Aetna and AgeWell, we can help them get on those type of programs because it's not just specific to ours, it could be helping them out with all of their other medical needs. And we accept long-term care plans, which is an expensive endeavor that when people have long-term care plans, but a lot of them do come and we can provide services and submit claims for them.
Fantastic. That's amazing. So you kind of touched on COVID and it affected, you know, every one of us in one way or another. So how did it affect your center? And also how did it impact the families that you serve?
It impacted our center. I won't forget that date where we closed. It was one of the hardest decisions that I've ever had to make in my professional life. And when we closed, we really were thinking it's going to be for, you know, it's going to be for a week, maybe a couple weeks. And the fact that we didn't get to open our center till 13 months later is just, I still look back at it and I can't believe it. But as a staff, we really did pivot really quickly to platforms that were going to be virtual, accessible to our clientele, the caregivers. The one part is you're talking about what we pride ourselves is on hands-on programs and services, and to have to go virtually to a population that is memory impaired and has enough difficulties as it is, was challenging. But we were able to reach and do a lot more than we thought we could. A lot of individual cognitive fitness programs, one-on-ones, FaceTimes, even Zoom calls where there was a group of people doing a little socialization group. And definitely on the other side with caregivers, with support groups, there was a part of it that was much easier for them to all get together at the same time rather than running to a center and trying to get there from, you know, the hour group. It was easy to jump on the call. So that part was challenging but rewarding in some ways. The one part that was really hard for our population was there were a lot of people that did not have access to phones and did not have access to this technology, which we tried to give people as much as we could. There was still so much isolation and the fear of leaving the house, even to go to the supermarket. So we did travel to many of our families' house and just visit them outside, which a lot of the families loved. If we were able to do that, that was great. But it really, really took a toll on a lot of our participants at our organization. The disease we know is progressive, but with, excuse me, my voice is, the disease is progressive, but the fact of this type of scenario with this challenging pandemic is that there was a lot of depression too. And so there was really hard to decipher between depression and progression and take depression with the individual has Alzheimer's, but then also their family member. When is this going to end? This is a 24/7 disease. And now I can't even get out of the house. And now I'm not sure I want someone to help me in my house. Are they going to be safe? Is that the right thing to do? There's so many feelings, guilt, and more guilt of what's going to be the right decision. And because it went on for so long, a lot of people prematurely had to decide if they could handle still having their loved one in the home, or did they have to place them in a facility, which there is nothing wrong with placing someone in the facility, but it made the decision have to happen much quicker without as much thought.
And what was going on in long-term care facilities at the time was probably, you know, making that decision that much more gut-wrenching, I would imagine.
Oh, Teresa, I mean, the fact that you would hear people, even if someone did get placed and then they couldn't visit them or they had to visit them from outside, I mean, it's that was torture in the sense of really not being able to have that touch. With this disease, as we all kind of know, it's important to have that hands-on approach, the closeness, the holding the hands, the fact to be so distant that way is very, very overwhelming, very overwhelming. So it was one of the most challenging times, I think, for this population, although a lot that was learned from it, to be able to know there should be a lot of planning that goes on before someone progresses too far into the disease on what they really want and what is their wishes. Because my greatest advice that I've always given families, let's not be reactive, let's be proactive in everything that we do. Because when you're in a crisis, it's hard to think rationally and know what's going to be the right decision to make.
That's great advice. All right. Well, we will take a brief break. We'll be back with more on the Long Island Alzheimer's and Dementia Center with Tori Cohen.
Healthcare Confidential is brought to you by Prescriptive Communications, LLC. Analyze, strategize, connect. That's our prescription for healthcare marketing. Prescriptive Communications puts healthcare businesses in front of the audiences they need to reach. If you're ready for a diagnostic on your marketing efforts, get in touch with Prescriptive today. Call us at 631-606-0525 or visit prxcommunications.com. That's 631-606-0525 or prxcommunications.com.
Welcome back to Healthcare Confidential. We're here with Tori Cohen, Executive Director of the Long Island Alzheimer's and Dementia Center. And we're talking about the support that families need throughout this Alzheimer's journey. So, Tori, you have been on a mission to raise the profile of the organization and to engage more with the healthcare community and the community at large. Can you talk about how you're partnering with some healthcare organizations, specifically with hospitals?
Yes. In the last couple of years, we have been partnering with a few different hospitals in the area, specifically Northwell Catholic Health System. The idea with that is that when people go into a hospital and they might end up coming in with, let's say, a right hip fracture, and then find out that there's memory issues, and this comes to the forefront, we want to be at that forefront with them. We want to be able to help them take that next step and know that there's someone else out there, because they're already overwhelmed to know that they're in the hospital in the midst of trying to figure out what to do with their loved one who had come in with a certain diagnosis. So we think it's important to be partnering with hospitals so they have one straight referral right to us, and we can be able to engage right away. We have been running support groups as well. So even if they are still in the hospital, that the caregiver can be attending our group and getting information they need as well. I think during the pandemic, it became very apparent that everyone really did need to work together, as there's that common line that people say, it takes a village. Well, we partnered with assisted livings too during the pandemic, where they actually sent activities to some of our participants' homes, and we led activities together on Zoom. Some of these assisted livings also got together food items, delivered those to some of our families that really needed food or were scared to go to the supermarket. The fact of the assisted livings, the hospitals, other organizations in the area that really wanted to continue to give the Long Island community what they needed, especially during a challenging time, it really worked out well in being able to help the families. So if it, like we always say, there's needs and there are wants, there was plenty of needs and not wants during this time. So I think everyone's lesson is, we can't go down the one lane by ourselves. We really have to work together. And that really makes everything much easier. And especially, like we say, for this disease, giving everyone what they can.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know that you're also advocating with legislators and civic organizations. So what does that look like for your organization?
We really didn't have so many strong political connections before, and we really are trying to work with a lot of the legislators and making them aware of this disease and what they can do for their community. And it was really important because we've been running a program for the last couple of months with it started off with one or two legislators, now we're up to 10, of educating about dementia, doing some brain fitness activities so people really understand what they could be doing to help themselves. Because it's not about just having the disease. Anyone that's out there, we really should be working on trying to keep ourselves going. Exercise, physical exercise is super important, but brain exercise is just as important. So the two go hand in hand. So working with these legislators and advocating for this disease on what's really needed is important, because I still think after all this time that there's a lot more funds that are needed to help with this population, because I think as you started your program, this disease is growing and growing right now, and it's hitting your neighbor, your colleague, could even be yourself. We don't know. And the fact is that we need to make sure that we're in control as much as we can and how to help people with this disease.
Yeah, it does seem that everyone you talk to has some connection, right? Yep. Or knows somebody or has an experience. Yep. And so you sort of talked a little bit about prevention. What do we know? I'm sure you're monitoring closely the research. What is there anything on the horizon that gives you some optimism in terms of treatment, prevention, any of that?
Well, I know that people have been hearing all about the recent Alzheimer's drug, which there's a lot of controversy about. I was surprised that at our foundation that we really didn't get as many calls about the drug as I thought we were, because, you know, there is so much hope and people want to be able to keep their loved one, you know, in a certain state or stage as long as they could. And I think there was a lot of disappointment with this most recent drug that they thought was going to help. For me, and what I say to the social workers when they're speaking to people, if this drug isn't the one that works, they had still found out certain things about this drug that could possibly lead to another one in the future. There's not one that I know about right now, but my, you know, best advice is to eat as healthy as you can. Because it's not about, well, if you just eat veggies or maybe just the Mediterranean diet, again, this is my opinion. Anything that you do that you can eat is healthy, that can avoid other diseases happening, is most important. And you really, physical exercise is super important. And socialization as much as you can is really, really important for this disease.
What's your best piece? That's great advice, but what's your best piece of advice for someone maybe just starting on this journey, just realizing that their loved one or they themselves maybe are experiencing these kinds of deficits?
I think my best advice would be that people need to know that accessing services and speaking to people is really, really the best medicine, because everyone is able to give advice on maybe something they experienced. It's hard, it's really hard to hear what goes on with Alzheimer's disease. And though people come into the center thinking it's just memory issues, they forgot this, they forgot that, they forgot someone's name, they forgot the place. It's really not just about memory. There's a lot of other behaviors that go along with it. So it's so important to be able to read up, because I always say powered with information is the most important, because then we can know what we're going to expect, because no one really wants to talk about it. But if we don't talk about it and we don't make our way through accepting what's going on, then I do feel like you're going to lose out on things that are really could be helpful. So that would be my, you know, best advice. You get someone calling in, if it's a person that is having symptoms or their family member, there's so much you want to give, so much information you want to give, but you don't want to overwhelm them either. But we say, we can do this together. We can navigate this together. This is where you should start. And, you know, a lot of times too, I think it's important, especially for anybody that's listening, just because you are thinking you are forgetting and having these issues, you really need to go to the doctor. It doesn't mean that you have this disease. You don't want to get yourself in that state of mind. There are a lot of other things that could be going on with your body that could be making you forget. And so I think it's important to, you have the symptoms, go to the doctor, make sure that they rule out anything else that's possibly happening. And like I mentioned before, depression could have some similar symptoms too, and just being stressed, which can make you forgetful. So that would also be my best advice, because someone, you might say, have you gone to the doctor yet? No. Well, then let's not take this next step that we're, you know, speaking to us. You can always call us back. We're here. Just make sure everything else is okay.
Yeah, that is good advice, especially if you have a family history. I know people tend to get real nervous about things that could just be a normal part of, you know, just slip of the memory. And we talked a little earlier, what book do you recommend if you have as a resource for someone to read up?
Well, it's interesting. When I first started with the organization in 2003, and I knew a lot about the geriatric population, but not a lot about the disease, I read The 36-Hour Day by Peter Ravens, and it really still holds true that anyone that comes to work at the organization, I always say, why don't you just pick up the book and start reading about it? Because A, it definitely will discuss different symptoms and behaviors with the disease, but it really gives you, I feel like, a view into this disease and what is happening. So I always used to say it's like a Bible, because then you can pick it up at any time and really be able to figure out what to do next with your loved one. So that would be my recommendation.
So I just want to circle back to your organization as a nonprofit. You rely heavily on fundraising, and that was certainly, I'm sure, impacted by COVID. And you also rely on volunteers to help you fulfill your mission. So how can people get involved?
We really love involvement from the community, because it is so important for us and in so many different ways, and also to want to be a sustainable organization in the future, because we know what we're doing is super important. So someone would just need to either call our number 516-767-6856 or go to our website www.lidementia.org, and you could be able to sign up to be a volunteer. We need administrative volunteers, someone just answering the phone, or if people do want to be with some of our participants in the room. You know, slowly but surely, we're letting and feeling comfortable about having other people come in, because it was a slow process on our reopening of making sure we were all safe. But obviously, the world opening up more, and we still wear masks, really proper protocol. We love to have that kind of involvement. And we love to have volunteers involved in a lot of our signature events. We have 3 signature events that really raised a lot of funds. It was hurt during COVID, but, you know, I have to say, we just had our women's luncheon in June, and that was sold out. And we were, you know, really happy. I think people were finally able to get out and network and really feel like they're doing something impactful for our organization. So we have a golf outing coming up in September 27th at Sands Point. And also a casino event in November and the Heritage Club in Bethpage. So those are some of our bigger events and ways to get involved. But there's a lot of ideas that people have. We're always open to listening to ideas how to raise money for us. And we're here to listen.
Great. Absolutely. So just one last question. If you could think about your vision, your ultimate vision for the future, what would you want to see in this world of Alzheimer's and dementia?
Well, most obvious for me would be a cure. I'd like, you know, that I always say I have a lot of passion, and I've been working with this organization for a long time. I'd love for there to be a cure so I wouldn't have this job anymore. But I really also feel like it's important that people don't feel stigmatized by this disease. It is different than a lot of other ones. And we know people are living longer because other diseases are being cured. But I really want people to know that just because you're diagnosed does not mean that your life is over. A lot of times people walk away from a doctor's office feeling like very depressed. What's going to happen now? And is it just, this is it? And I really want people to feel that there's hope, and there are things that you can do productively, and that we do focus on their abilities, because we try to help people do as much as they can. So I think that's where I want people to be able to reach out and not feel like there's nothing else to do. That's not what we want people to walk away with.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us here on Healthcare Confidential, Tori Cohen. Do you want to give the website and the phone number one more time?
Yes, thank you, Teresa. So the website is www.lidementia.org, and our telephone number is 516 767-6856. And I really, really appreciate being a guest on your show. I think this was a very important topic to discuss for your listeners. And I want everyone to know that there is a place that is out there that can help you.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more on how important this is. I also want to remind our listeners that new Healthcare Confidential episodes are available every Monday morning, wherever you access podcasts. The show is brought to you by Prescriptive Studios and is hosted on Omni Studio. Our theme song is an original composition written and performed by the amazingly talented Patrick Bukarsik. Our production assistant is John Roy. Views expressed on the show are solely those of the host and guest and do not reflect on any other entity. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us your feedback and help us continue the conversation by dropping a note on the Healthcare Confidential Facebook page. Be well, everyone. We'll be right back.